Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Finney Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for the that comforting sort of commentary that you do need before you go to sleep at night, you know, because you're like, you know, I just don't think I'm going to get a good night's sleep if I don't hear about my ruthless criminal enslavement and subsequent experimentation by psychopaths, you know? It's just that I can't sleep peacefully without a little bit of Vinnie Eastwood at the end of the night. I don't know what it is. See, I know that it happens to you. I know there's a good reason for it. Because ultimately, a lot of the things that we talk about are so scary and so horrific and so real and visceral in their nature that because of the very fact that we're going through what we're going through, we need something to release the tension. Some use masturbation, others use the Vinnie Eastwood Show. But there you go. My very special guest is from climateviewer.com, the author of Climate Viewer News, Jim Lee. No relation to Bruce. Jim, welcome to the program.
How do you know? It's like a finger pointing away to the moon.
What's up, baby?
That's know, a Bruce Lee. Because I am like water, my friend. Sometimes
you
I can
like
crash.
Water, my friend.
Sometimes I can flow.
My favorite Bruce Lee quote ever. Bite me.
It's such a pleasure having you on the show. Now, we do want to get into this geoengineering debate here that's going on. Like, what do you mean, debate? Is there actually some kind of debate going on here, right? But in either case, I do want to get a little bit of background on you, Jim, and how you got to this, you know, point in your career, totally. As it were.
Okay, so like I'd say probably around 2010, I started my activism, and before that, I was known as Resonated, R-E-Z-N-A-D, resonated.com. I created a map called the Radiation Database, and I basically mapped out every nuclear reactor on the planet, all the ionospheric heaters like HARP and missile defense radars, laser beams, oh my. And I put all of these into a Google Earth file called the Radiation Database. And then naturally, I wanted people to download it. And then I got tried to make a map to show it off. So I learned to program. And then I needed to make a website to put that map on. So I learned to do websites. And my goodness, 7 years later, it's turned into a big wet mess. And I have three websites. Climateviewer.com is my blog. And that is Climate Viewer News, where I map pollution, privacy, and propaganda, and the three are intimately related. Climateviewer.org, where I created a 3D globe called Climate Viewer 3D. It's a way to see everything going on in the world simultaneously, live. You got satellites, earthquakes, fires, lightning, volcanoes, everything that could impact your life in a significant way, live on the internet in one spot. Plus, all of my previous maps that I created, the NSA map of the Five Eyes and every single spy facility in the world, surface-to-air missiles worldwide, 800,000 fracking wells, 1.2 million cell phone towers, and the list goes on, but 455 maps just on climateviewer.org. And then finally, weathermodificationhistory.com. And this is my all-inclusive one page. If you don't know about weather control and you go to weathermodificationhistory.com, it will blow your freaking mind. Because in there you can find 500 newspaper articles from the 1800s to present, meticulously recrafted to look like the originals from the Google News and other sources. You can see patents, programs, maps of geoengineering weather modification, cloud seeding. It's a weathermodificationhistory.com. I see you there. I'll drop you a link in chat in just a second. Weathermodificationhistory.com is the most extensive on the planet. And we have a little special thing going on there. There's a timeline, and in that, you can actually see, you know, chronologically organized for your educational bliss, all of the major projects from the 1800s to present, you know, like Project Cameo, where they were dumping barium clouds over Alaska, Operation Popeye, where the U.S. Air Force was modifying weather over Vietnam, Project Nile Blue, where the CIA was destroying sugar crops over Cuba in a rain embargo. Many, many projects you've never heard of, all organized meticulously by myself and Dominic Marama. This is my co-conspirator. He is the Robin to my Batman. And we saved the world over there on weathermodificationhistory.com. So the three of these combined to form Voltron and me, that I remember everything I wrote on them because I wrote them. I did the graphics, the coding, and everything. I want to take all of this collective knowledge and go to the Weather Modification Conference this year and tell the geoengineers themselves that enough is enough, and I have a proposed solution to the secretive world of weather modification, geoengineering, rogue geoengineering, and weather warfare. And I call it the Environmental Modification Accountability Act of 2018. And it's basically an add-on to the NMOD law, which is a weather warfare ban that was passed in 1978. So what I'm here today to promote is that I'm doing a trip to the American Meteorological Society's 98th annual meeting. And at that meeting in Austin, Texas, will be a conference called the 21st Conference on Planned and Inadvertent Weather Modification. At that will be, you know, hundreds of cloud seeding scientists, weather modification experts, and geoengineers. They will be presenting for 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I've already got my ticket to attend all of those presentations. I will be allowed to ask questions at the end of each of those presentations, and the American Meteorological Society has already given me permission to film anything I want except the presentations. The presentations themselves will be recorded by the AMS and available after the event is done. So you will be able to hear me in there giving questions just on their website. And I hope to be filming my interactions with these scientists and getting some response from them and hopefully some support on our law. And the idea is pretty simple. I've already got five geoengineers to say not only is this a good idea, it's necessary. So what I want to do is get a whole bunch of geoengineers basically to sign a little petition and say, you know what, we agree. It's time that we end the secretive world of weather modification, geoengineering, weather warfare, space weather modification, ionospheric heating, and all of that. And I propose a two-step solution. One, give me a 48-hour notice before you modify the weather so that we can tell what your intention is and where you're going to do it and what you into, you know, what you're going to do. So if you create a storm that creates a tornado and kills somebody, we can hold you to account in court. But we all know that there are liars and there are secret programs, secret, you know, this and that. So we have to account for that. So how do we protect ourselves from weather warfare and rogue geoengineering? We create a worldwide sensor network, which I have already begun to build on climateviewer.org. It gathers all of the sensors of the world, puts them in one place so that we can monitor all things at one time. And I want to create a box to go in your backyard called the Climate Viewer. And it goes either on your roof or in the backyard, and it has a camera pointed at the sky. It can videotape the sky in your backyard, stream it live to the internet, display it on climateviewer.org. So that there's a little dot in your backyard and anybody can click on it and see what the sky looks like overhead. It can also detect atmospheric aerosols, meaning that if a nuclear power plant blew up near you or was spewing radiation, you'd be the first to know, and then we'd be the second to know instantaneously. So what I'm proposing is a two-step solution. Transparency up front, verification on the rear. The reason I'm doing this is because this is very similar to what happened to nuclear explosions. They banned upper atmospheric nuclear explosions back in the 50s. And then it wasn't until 1994 with the START Treaty that they created an international monitoring system that could detect the faint vibrations of nuclear explosions. That way, whenever Kim Jong, whatever his name is, fires off a nuclear bomb in North Korea, we instantly know, because seismographs, infrasound recorders, and satellites detect those vibrations. So when they do that, we instantaneously know there was a nuclear explosion, there was a violation of the thing, and that's the point of this. Even though weather warfare is banned, even though the United Nations banned weather warfare in 1978, it was called the Environmental Modification Convention. The long version of it was the Convention for the Prohibition of the Hostile Use of Environmental Technologies, Environmental Modification Technologies. Thank God they shortened that to ENMOD, E-N-M-O-D. So if you will go to climateviewer.com/ENMOD, ENMOD, you can read about my solution. That's what you got up on the screen there. You can read about my solution. I have a 5-minute video explaining what my solution is, what my message to the geoengineers will be. In addition to that, I created a new article called 10 Technologies to Own the Weather Today. It is on that same article, and you will see an infographic with 10 listed technologies that you can own the weather today. And that is a reference to the owning the weather in 2025. That's it right there. Own the Weather in 2025 documents from the U.S. Air Force, where they were talking about how to weaponize weather by the year 2025. And the specific gist that you want to take from that paper is allow universities and corporate scientists to study weather modification, collect all of their research, use it to make weapons. So my goal in going to this conference, if people will support me on this GoFundMe, is to deliver a message of hope, a possible solution, and to protect us from weather warfare. We know, based on history, that in the 70s, the United States and Air Force and CIA were engaged in weather warfare. We have documented proof of it and a weather warfare ban that occurred as a result. What everybody won't admit today is that Russia, China, and America still have these technologies. They're far more advanced and they're far more deadly. When Secretary of Defense William Cohen says others are engaged in an eco type of terrorism whereby they can dominate the climate by creating earthquakes and volcanoes and set them off remotely using electromagnetic radiation, that's the Secretary of Defense saying you can use HARP, ionospheric heaters, and microwaves to blow up volcanoes, set off earthquakes. And rain embargoes, weather warfare, have been used in the 70s. And today, President Ahmadinejad of Iran says the European Union is stealing their rain. And it hit 156 degrees in Iran. And just the other day, a 7.0 earthquake hit the border of Iraq and Iran in sub-zero temperatures. It's bad. So that's my solution. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And you got any questions there, Vinny?
Not as such, right? Just think about this, though. If you're going into a conference and the irony is you're getting to not film any of the speakers speak, right? They want to retain exclusive publishing rights, I assume, after they've been edited?
I imagine that won't be the case, and I can assure you it won't be the case, because even if I'm not allowed to record and put it on the internet, you can bet your bottom button that I'm going to have a recorder on me. So, I mean, I'm going to review the footage of all this, and my questions better be in there, because if they're not, I will Title 17 the hell out of that and put it on the internet anyway. They know me. So that's not an issue for me personally. I'm going to be there. I'm going to hear everything they got to say. And I remember just about everything I hear or read. So I'm going to, you know, like I said, they're going to record it. All of the presentations will be available afterwards. And hopefully, you know, when I play it back and I compare it to my notes, they will not have edited. Because if they do, boy, you know, I'm going to play all the stuff they edit out. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I'm a very open source kind of guy. So I'm sure they're not going to try to pull a fast one like that with me in the house.
Yeah. Unless, of course, they listen to the radio show and know that you're going to have some kind of recording device there and take it off you before you do it. But you know.
You make excellent point. That's why you have another one and another one. Surveillance is hard, man.
Yeah, let's hope they didn't hear the second part of the show. Now, the element that I want to actually really get into here is the denial aspect, okay? So people are in blanket denial that any kind of weather modification really of any kind is going on at any time, regardless, you know, if they don't know about, oh, the government would tell us. But the problem is that, no, they don't tell you. But they're required to. I know, but they're still not telling you. All right.
They are not required to. I mean, it depends on your country. Now, in America, because of what we did in the weather warfare stuff, because Jack Anderson found out about it, the reporter saw a note on Lyndon Johnson's desk. Senator Claiborne Pell had three hearings, two of which are on my website. The third is still classified to this day. Because of all that, they actually had a 780-page document put out that basically was like a full disclosure. Everything the government's been doing for the last 50 years. And you wouldn't believe some of the stuff in there. And here's the irony of it. It's called Weather Modification Problems, Programs, and Potential, something like that. Anyway, it's like 700 pages long, and all of the chemtrail websites say, this is proof of chemtrails, and there is no mention at all of using jet aircraft to make clouds at all in that paper. Just vague references to pollution issues. So people don't even understand what that paper is, but that paper came as a result of all of these disclosures that happened because of what the U.S. did over Vietnam. Then they passed a law called the Weather Modification Reporting Act of 1976, followed up by another weather modification policy. But regardless, they passed laws back in 76 that say if you modify the weather in America, you must report it to the Department of Commerce and NOAA. And you could actually, 2 years ago, the forms were still on corporateservices.noaa.gov's website. I have backups of all these files. But there's two forms that you have to fill out, one before you modify the weather and one while you're modifying it. So it's an initial report and an interim report on weather modification activities. You can get both of these from my website. So in America, you have to do that on a federal level, but on a state level, I have another article, if you scroll down on weathermodificationhistory.com where you were just at, where it says laws just past the section you're on. Scroll down right there, laws. If you see that, that's weather modification laws in America. And what you'll see is that each state has different laws. And one of the ones that really stand, and I've got the worldwide laws at the top, and the federal reporting laws are right there. Those are the ones I was just referring to, initial report, and the other one are right there. And they're available on my Scribd. So if you want to see those, that's the two forms, initial report right there. Yeah, the two right underneath that where you're at. Next one down, go down, that right there. Click that. That's the two forms that you have to fill out in America if you're going to modify the weather. So these are the laws in America regarding reporting to the government. Now, I have the reports from NOAA. They're not available on websites. Had to call NOAA. But I've mapped out all of the NOAA reports. This form you're seeing right here, everybody that filled one out from 2002 to 2012, I have all of those reports on climateviewer.org in a map in the weather modification section. So you can actually see who filled out this report, gave it to the government. I got the reports, put it into a map, bam. Now, that doesn't account for everything because there are a lot of exemptions. And if you look at the weather modification reporting laws in the state of Washington, not Washington, D.C., Washington, you'll see that there are exemptions. And one of those exemptions is for universities. Yeah, I mean, they have exemptions for universities and stuff. What does it say there?
It says, the department, to the extent it deems practical, should provide by regulation for exempting from license, permit, and liability requirements, one, research and development and experiments by state and federal agencies, institutions of higher learning, and bona fide non-profit research organizations. Oh, so they can research and experiment on
it. Only one of those three is just one. It's just section one, and they don't even have to tell you.
And on to two, laboratory research and experiments. Three, activities of an emergent character or protection against fire, frost, sleet, or fog. And four, activities normally engaged in for purposes other than those inducing, increasing, decreasing, or preventing precipitation or hail. So basically, you have to follow all these laws unless you don't want to.
All of that. Yeah, exactly. So that's the truth of the matter. I mean, it's pretend. It's all of this, you know, bullshit legislation. It means nothing. It is slave speak by definition. It has no meaning at all. Any NGO, I mean, is serious? Any institution of higher learning? Climate Viewer News is an institution of higher learning. Does that mean I can go modify the weather in Washington and not have to tell anybody, or are they going to throw my ass in jail?
I don't know. It depends whether or not you're...
So it's a very gray area, right?
It depends if you're connected to some kind of banking syndicate or not. It's not really much of a gray area at all, bro.
The truth. Oh, wait a minute. You're J.P. Morgan's
I'm just
people?
I'm just taking a stab in the dark.
Dog. Do your thing, dog. It's true. I mean, I agree with you, Vinny. The thing I love about you most is you keep laughing through all this. And the opposite of fear porn, the opposite of demoralization, is to be able to laugh at the craziness of all this. Yeah. And that's my motto too. So we share that in common, that I try to keep it light, and because it's a very heavy subject to think about the fact that, you know, every single inch of this world has somebody controlling that airspace. Over water wars, or, you know, economic warfare, Russia, China, and America in a tug of war, pretending it's climate change and blaming us for our car farts. You know, it's insanity.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I'm doing what I'm doing. Is like I take the big picture. I look at the technology. I look at who does it, who do it, who is behind it, who be doing what, and I try to map it all out so that I can see the big picture. And I have all of this memorized, as what you can clearly see. Everything I just told you, you were pulling it up, and there it was. I'm going to take all that and go to the Weather Mod place. And the interesting thing is this. Have you ever seen the Consumer Electronics Show, where they have the new games
every
year?
The one where they bring out all the new stuff that's like really scary-looking technology, and they're like, buy this. It's going to be great for your consumers.
Yeah, they're like, check out the new VR headset, and people are like falling over, and you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, so this conference I'm going to is similar to that, but replace it with weather nerds. So there'll be like booths with people selling radar and, you know, some, you know, climate change NGO, Sierra Club floating around there, all that, you know, stuff. Head of the National Weather Service, head of the Storm Prediction Center. They'll all be walking around with their little NOAA things on.
I was just thinking
NASA
about it. You could make some extra money there if you sell some umbrellas.
I'm gonna pass. I think I might need a license for that. But what I plan on doing is that infographic I made with the 10, you know, technologies, I'm gonna print it out so it's about a foot and a half wide. Mm-mm-mm. And I'm gonna laminate the damn thing so that when I'm up there and I meet this, you know, I imagine it's gonna go like this. I'm gonna see this dude and he's like, hey, I'm Tedster from Texas. KNTV News, meteorologist. I'm the shit, you know? And I'm going to say, yeah, you know about chemtrails? And he's going to start with this pompous-ass attitude like I normally catch from these meteorologists on Facebook right before I thoroughly embarrass them. The difference is, on Facebook, they can run away or they can just laugh it off. But in front of their colleagues, they can be made to be look very stupid very quickly. And for me, I have the beauty of being able to remember citations. So, like, I get these scientists, and they, of course, at first they think that they've got, you know, me all canned up here, the redneck accent, and think, Suddenly, 5 seconds later, they're feeling very small and insignificant because they didn't know anything I just said. And that's what I intend to do, is go down there and say, look, guys, I know all 10 of these technologies. I know who make them. I know their entire history. I know how they work. test me. I dare you. So, since you believe me that I know what these are, and you're willing to listen, here's my solution. And by the way, we the people of the internets, we're tired of your shit. And we know what you've been up to. It's on weathermodificationhistory.com. I'd like you to knock it off. Tell us when you're doing it beforehand, because you're obviously not going to stop. You're addicted. You know, they're addicted. They call it climate intervention. The person who needs an intervention is these damn climate changers.
My name's Ted Tedson, and I'm a climate changer.
I'm a climate changer. I just can't help it, man. I love steering hurricanes. It just gets me off.
Hi, Ted.
Hi, Ted.
and there's like a 10-step program from ionospheric heating all the way to water vapor pollution recovery.
It starts with, I promise to go out and plant trees and stop talking about CO2 scrubbing artificial trees. Mm. I'm going to plant a real tree. Oh, my God. Yeah, they're in like la-la land. And basically, I don't know if you're probably familiar with this. You've heard of technocracy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so these climatards, they're all technocrats. And they really just see this as some, you know, scientific solution that could be handled by, you know, the board. And they'll just, you know, divvy out rain to whoever deserves it, you know. And they're literally writing laws on a global basis right now, Solar Radiation Management Governance Initiative, to figure out how to pay the dead people. Because when they spray the world with sulfuric acid, titanium, aluminum, calcium, diamond dust, yellow freaking lollipops, when they spray the world with that stuff, it's going to alter rainfall patterns worldwide. And it's going to go like this. The models say, just like when the Mount Pinatubo eruption happened, the thing that they're trying to mimic, that the southern hemisphere dries up. And the northern hemisphere, where all the white people are, gets wetter. Yay! So is this really about changing the temperature and regulating, you know, staving off CO2 so we don't global warming our ass into oblivion? Or is this really about controlling water? Because it seems to me like if what you say you're going to do is going to steal all the water from the southern hemisphere, give it to the northern hemisphere, you know it, and you're trying to talk about how to pay the dead people, climate change didn't kill people, you killed people. And these guys are sick.
Yeah. That's what happens when you join a cult. And how do you know you're in a cult? They treat you very nicely, and they give you compliments, and they tell you how smart you are for being there. And then they ask you to pay a membership fee of some description and get you to agree that you want the certain outcome. And after you've agreed that you want that certain outcome, that's when they ask you to start doing other things, like recruiting for them or speaking for them at certain engagements and things of that nature. And then they'll start telling you, that's a very good idea to start poo-pooing and attacking anybody else who's within the cult who's starting to question it at all. And tell them to pull their heads in and start towing the line.
I think a wise man once said, do not question my authority. Cartman, no?
Yeah, I got it. But what happens here is that we don't know that we're part of a cult, all right? And I think a lot of us in the truth movement don't realize that we've actually become part of various cults of personality and modes of thinking about political dialogue and things of that nature, whereas we don't have a holistic and an individual perspective anymore. We're actually trying to create ourselves little groups and things like that and all come together on these particular issues, when the reality is, when you're looking at the work of, say, Jim Lee and one other guy, you're talking about two guys who've actually done a composite work of geoengineering and various other events, unlike anybody else in the history of the planet, right? And you think to yourself, maybe joining groups isn't quite as important as figuring out what you want to do with yourself and your being.
Isn't that so true, dude? Keep preaching, man. I'm just going to kick back and listen to this.
I'm done. Your turn.
Okay, good. So, I stumbled upon something called slave speak. and it's on the sidebar of every page. If you scroll up just a hair, you'll see it there. But it's basically a guy with a little TV shooting himself in the head on the sidebar right there under that. Perfect right there. And there's a quote there by Carl Sagan that pretty much sums this up, you know, about the bamboozle. And, it, you know, it's basically that, you know, once you believe a bamboozle for long enough, you cannot unbelieve it. Like, it's painful. People don't want to unbelieve it. And this is part of a slave speak mentality. And what it is, and I call it the annihilation of mental colonization, you know, shout out the Immortal Technique. It's an amazing thing to realize that something like the word chemtrail can actually mean many different things to many different people. And then you realize that and you go, wait a minute. So when you're saying chemtrail, you don't mean like depopulation chemtrail. You mean like mind control chemtrail? No, dude, I'm talking about aliens with orbs and they're putting nanobots in the few, it's coming out of the planes and pumping them out. Okay, that kind of chemtrail. Gotcha. Talk to the next guy. What are you talking about? Barium and aluminum, dog, spraying it every day. And I'm like, amen. They spraying them chemtrails with sounding rockets and jet, you know, fuel. It's bitch. Because aluminum and barium are in jet fuel. 9,300 parts per billion in JPA. Bad. Cause Alzheimer. Ooh, hate it. Aluminum and barium have been dumped out of sounding rockets for 60 years in space. And they heat them with ionospheric heaters, like in the infographic there. You see the rocket go up. It sprays out the aluminum and barium out the back of it. A microwave beam heats that up. They modify the ionosphere. The reason they spray the chemicals in space is because the ionosphere is invisible. You can't see the Van Allen belts till you spray some metal in it. And guess what? That shit is magnetic. So it sticks to the Van Allen belts. It actually sticks to those ribbons in the sky. Mm. They're called magnetic field lines. And because they stick to the magnetic field lines, they race along them back to the ground. And that lets them model what does the ionosphere look like right now. And then the military says, well, that's completely freaking wrong. Make it like this. And then the guys up there at HAARP or the mobile ionospheric heaters or the ionospheric heaters they have on satellites, they correct it. And that's what's going on a global scale. Macro corrections of our ionosphere to control radio waves on a global scale. The Russians said that HAARP can make region-wide headaches. And they weren't bullshitting. Because if you create ELF waves, these actually can go to the bottom of the ocean. They travel through bone and stone. Mm. So these frequencies are so low that they can see underground structures. They can reflect them off the moon. No shit. And they can, when they shoot them underground, they can collect them with something called HALO, the HAARP LOFAR array. And LOFAR is this low frequency array. It's the size of Europe. It is on top of Europe. It covers all of Europe. And there are these little low frequency listening posts that basically HAARP can make a big thump. Like, you know, you ever heard somebody with their car stereo and you can hear their ass coming a mile away?
Yeah.
Same. Low frequencies, they endure for great distances and they pass through solid objects. You can't hear the higher frequencies like the tweeter. You know what I mean? Till they just get close to you. But these low frequencies, when they travel through the ground, they change. And as they change, when they hit a void or a big open spot, supercomputers can collect that and see them so that they can see underground caves under China and Iran where they have nuclear bombs and where they're building nuclear bombs. It's called tomography. So they literally use the sky as a subwoofer to create low frequency waves to look underground for nuclear reactors and nuclear, you know, chemical weapons factories and, you know, just look underground. Well, guess what happens when you look underground with high powered ELF waves?
It shakes the ground and causes freaking earthquakes.
Shit, right? I mean, you are promoted. You are suddenly a rocket scientist. Oh, wait, a HAARP scientist. And I'll mail you your PhD, dude. You are smart.
It's like, hey, here's a really brilliant idea. What? Let's cause earthquakes where they're manufacturing nuclear weapons, you know? I just don't see what could possibly go wrong.
You tell that to the Bashir nuclear site. Oh, wait, that was a virus. Never mind, Stuxnet. Sorry, wrong one.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the ionosphere they love didn't blowing heat up. What was it? Fukushima. Right. A lot of people have been wondering about that, about whether or not that was a HAARP attack. What do you reckon, bro? Just off the top of my head or something. If you don't want to answer it, let's move to the next question.
I would love to answer it. I have not been asked this one in a while. It's probably been 3 years, and I've learned a lot more about it since. It's really crazy. All right, well, so here we go. Sign. It's a very cool story. Yeah. So we're going to do HAARP before the egg. All right. With Fukushima, we did have a 9.0 earthquake, and the ionosphere heated before that earthquake. Mm. This is how the science goes. The excuse, the explanation, the scientific community say is earthquake lights or rainbow clouds or ionospheric heating above earthquakes. All three things can happen. They're called earthquake lights, earthquake clouds. They look like rainbow clouds.
Did they by chance make these turns up before or after HAARP was invented and tested?
I would say after, but let's finish the story, the official story. We're going to stick with the official story first, and then I'm going to tell you the truth.
All right, I'm going to
Okay, so the official story is earthquakes have a pre-release of radiation because the crust is cracking underground and radiation is escaping through the ground. And as it escapes to space, it is visible in clouds and the ionospheric heating above. And I say that if you have something called an ionospheric heater and you see the ionosphere heat before an earthquake, I'm thinking it's the ionospheric heater like everybody else on the planet, because it's a no freaking brainer. So the question is, like, I think it was Ben Fulford was the one who originated this theory.
He called me on the day of the quake, actually, just like interrupted me like on air while I was interviewing a guest who kind of got shuffled into the background.
You know? Okay. Well, I read that, and I remember all this stuff. So yeah, I mean, this is like 2012. I remember reading 2011 right after it had happened. I remember reading Ben Fulford stuff. And I was like, yep, you know, but do you know the why? I mean, this is the thing that I want to know if it's true. I have never validated it, but I was told that the reason why Japan was hit with a 9 and all of this stuff is because the Japanese government had found the U.S. government, specifically the U.S. military, guilty of war crimes in Iraq for using depleted uranium on the battlefield.
Mm.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know that in Fallujah, there are babies with three eyes. I know that my neighbor came back with radiation poisoning. I know many people, and I think this numbers are pretty scary. There was 500,000 deployed, and at least 250,000 of them are dead. From self-inflicted or whatever help, they're killing themselves in massive numbers regardless.
Well, that's because the Veterans Administration applies them full of psychotropic drugs that have the side effect known as murder-suicide, predominantly with their patients that have PTSD, because it's actually cheaper to have them die or kill themselves than to get them better and send them back, or just to continue taking care of them and the damage that they've suffered by serving for the rest of their life.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it at all. You know, I actually went in the military and I never made it out of basic. And when I left basic training, the military agreed with me that I was never there.
Yep.
And we're going to leave it at that. But some ill shit went down, some illegal shit went down at basic training, and I was right in the middle of it. But regardless, I found out very quickly that that was not for me, and I'm still patriotic. So crossed up, whatever. But,
well, it's like Jefferson said, bro, it's a patriot's duty to protect his country from his government.
Amen. Amen. So yeah, that's been my role. Like it's kind of ironic. I went into the Air Force to do spy satellite optics, and I was going to work in a lab, you know, basically looking at Google Earth, spying on people. So what I end up doing, wrote my own damn map. I spy on everybody, and I put it on there.
Whoa! So the military trained you how to spy on the military, and you've now done it.
We never officially got there. I mean, full story, I got a 98 out of a 98 on my ASVAB. So since I got a perfect score, I could choose whatever job I wanted, and I wanted a computer job. So then they were like, well, that's another test. So I took the computer test, and it was like, which one of these objects does not, you know, belong? And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is not what I thought this test would be. And apparently I was like 2 points short for the computer test. You got to be kidding me. So I didn't get in the computer section. They're like, pick from this list. And I was like, that sounds the coolest. It'll be in a lab. I'll be working with computers and yada, yada. So my tech school would have been 3.5 years. And I would have been an officer when I came out because I had 3 years ROTC. And, you know, because of this position, it would have been OTS and all that. So I would have been an officer by the time I got out of tech school and sitting in there with a top secret clearance, you know, spying on people, you know, humping goats in the hills of Afghanistan.
But that would have just been OTT.
I mean, seriously, it would have been a pretty cool job. But at the same time, like, you know, it just... You know, you never know how life's going to throw you a curveball. You know what I mean? So, and I think, you know, I'm going to get all Garth Brooks and, you know, thank God for unanswered prayers. Because if that hadn't happened, I would have been in that lab and I wouldn't be with my beautiful wife and have my two amazing daughters. And my life is perfect. So I can't be happier about the decisions I've made. And, you know, that's why I do it. You know, I've got that patriot in me, you know, that revolutionary. And apparently I wasn't ready to say yes or that effing often.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the things that the New World Order is trying to do is to actually extinguish people's sense of patriotism. Because you know who really doesn't like ending national sovereignty and being enveloped into an enslaved world government? Patriots.
Ain't that the truth? If you're a patriot, they put you on a list and monitor you closely.
Hmm. Not to learn off you, but just to make sure you're not doing anything too naughty or too risque. And if you are, mate, I remember this guy, he did an article about how the CIA can hack into your brand new car's computer and make you do an incredibly hard turn out of nowhere. A day or two after releasing that article, that guy driving along a straight road did a left turn, a hard left turn, directly into a tree. I guess he didn't see that coming.
Oh, he should have really changed cars. I mean, if I were that guy, I'd be getting the Volkswagen Beetle so damn fast.
Well, I don't know. It's just what that spoke of to me is that a lot of the time that we study a lot of what we're dealing with, we forget that we actually really don't know what we're dealing with. You know, because a lot of things, if you're a good man, for example, there's a lot of evil things that bad men will do that wouldn't even occur to you. And every moment that you think that you're getting more familiar with your enemy, they do something that surprises you. And not something that surprises you, just know, oh, wow, he surprised me. It's kind of something that shocks you in a, I cannot believe I'm seeing what I'm seeing kind of way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not surprised anymore. I was a prison guard, and I worked with, you know, Hawaiian inmates. There was 460 of them, and they were all lifetime inmates. They had been at another prison, burned it down and killed four officers, and then came to the middle of the Arizona desert where I was, and they were being housed by Corrections Corporation of America. The private prisons everybody talks about, I worked in it. And let me tell you, son, that is the craziest thing job I ever had in my life. And I mean,
human farming.
I had seven separate attempts on my life, you know, blades swinging at my face. The last time the blade literally touched my eyelash. So I went to my car. I prayed a lot and I said, God, I think you have given me as clear a sign that you can only be so lucky for so long. And I am fast, and I can handle my, you know, self. And I think I've proved that by now. I should leave. So we left and went, you know, from Arizona back to South Carolina fast as I effing could.
Smart move, bro. You could have ended up as a big kahuna burger.
Oh man, he could, dude, that could have, the guy, he was, I can't say names, but he was 400 pounds and he was on psych meds. We're outside in the hallway and the guy next to me says, you know, screw that guy, you know, he's crazy, right? And I'm like, he hasn't taken his meds for 2 days. And the guy's pushing a buffer, you know, like buffing the hall. And before he finished that sentence, that dude's elbow hit him in the head. And his head, he was leaned up against the wall. And when I'll never forget the sound. There was very little left of the dude's face. And this 400-pound man literally hit him in the head and then came across at me. And I, you know, pretty much tripped underneath him and got him pinned back and held him for 3 minutes while stabbing him in the neck while hitting my man down button, screaming bloody murder. Yeah, with my thumb. I was stabbing him with my thumb, just to be very clear. So I had him one hand on the chin. My knee was in his back. His arms were out. You know what I mean? He was like bent over my knee and I was stabbing him in the throat while missing my man down button. Anyway, they put me on the CCA training video that 170-pound man subdues 400-plus-pound inmate. Anyway, so
something to be proud of, you know.
It is. It really is. I've never told that story on the air, but
see, they never put the video in it. This is why you don't have your inmates on medications in the first place, you know. Oh, and this is why you feed them really well, nutritious food and give them people to look up to and respect, that command respect and can defend themselves, because that way their behavior starts to get copied by the inmates.
Yeah, but it's, you know, in CCA's defense, like that, I worked in a state prison as well. And as much as, you know, like I see the inherent wrongness of corporation prison, you know what I mean? The for-profit side of it and the American Legislative Economic Council literally went and wrote draft legislation, SB 1070, so that they could get the cops in Arizona to check people's IDs so they could put more immigrants in more CCA prisons. Now, that's a vicious circle I don't approve of, and that's messed up. But as far as the inmates being treated professionally, the comparison between what I saw in CCA and what I saw in the state prison here in South Carolina. All right, I'll give you one example and let's not talk about prisons anymore. We had a cell extraction in CCA. I had a team. We all put on body armor. We had five guys. You grab a head, you grab arm, leg, leg. And the sixth man was a captain or sergeant because they had a video camera in one hand and a pepper spray can in the other hand. That way, the entire thing was recorded, everything was done properly, and if the guy didn't comply, he was coming out. And we had a very clear plan on how to do it so that the inmate wasn't hurt and so we weren't hurt. And I mean, I've gone into these cell extractions, had feces thrown in my face. You won't believe the kind of thing you have to do. So anyway, I come to South Carolina, same thing. We're getting ready to do a cell extraction. I look at the assistant warden, and she's an old black lady, goes, go get him. I swear to God, that is what she said to me. I said, what's our policy here? Because I'm, you know, I'm new. I know you've been working in a prison before. You know what to do. I said, all right, well, what's the policy here, though? Like, how do we do this? She said, you know, just go get them. And so there's some really strange things going on in prisons. I'll never, ever work in one again. It was a hell of an experience. But yeah, I mean, like, I would hate to be in a state prison. I'd hate to be in a CCA prison. Never intend to go near them again.
Yeah, and that's from somebody who wasn't even on the inside.
I know, dude. No, you don't get it twisted. If you are anybody who works in a corrections facility is a prisoner, whether you, and they will tell you that you don't understand how it affects you. Hearing a murderer talk about what they did, and then having to see that same man crying because his kid, you know, just graduated, or his wife just, you know, remarried or whatever, seeing them then and then having to have compassion, you know, and it's natural. You have compassion for these. You constantly feel sorry for these people, even though. So it's a very, you know, Stockholm syndrome inducing, post-traumatic stress inducing environment. And I feel for anybody that has to work there in any one of those facilities.
Anyway, well, you know, you should pray just for described them. My entire philosophy on how sorry I feel for everybody who has to do everything that they don't want to, you know. It doesn't matter whether you're a school teacher or getting into politics, or you're a cop, or you're starting a law career, or you're doing sales, or you're in retail. It doesn't matter. Everything's become a broader sense of prison, including, as it now turns out, being a prison guard.
Well, I think that, but I would just give it the caveat that there's a special kind of individual that can be a cop and do sex crimes or do child, you know, crimes. You follow, where you actually have to sit there and watch the video. And I want you to think about a person who's done that for 25 years and how much weight that causes on a person. There are special people who can do that. My hat's off to them. I personally have, I'm apparently very thick on the outside, and I can, you know, handle my own, but I'm squishy on the inside and I feel a lot. So it's not the place for me, is all I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to crush my soul by being there. So this is why I do activism the way I do. You know, as a Boy Scout, ROTC, this is my thing. You know, like, I want to help the world, do my daily turn, and I have fun doing this. And for me, studying the topic of weather control specifically, it really is a game changer for people who talk about climate change. You can't talk about extreme weather events without talking about who's making them or the potential that they are, like the climate changers.
Isn't that funny, so that's though? Is that the people come out and go, oh, climate change is going to make the weather worse. It's going to be really, really bad. And then they go and make the weather word bad. And then they go, see, you didn't listen to us.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like they're going to blame us for CO2 causing all these extreme weather events. There's been 100 years of weather control on a worldwide basis with no accountability, no transparency. So that's why I've got this solution, the Environmental Modification Accountability Act of 2018. That's why I want to go to the American Meteorological Society's meeting and tell them, you know, hey, dude, enough's enough. It's time to change this situation. Give us some accountability. Let us know in advance, you know, and we're going to build a sensor network. We expect you to do the same. So my whole hope here is that the government can say, get all of the world, you know, if the weather in Zimbabwe, the weather in Mozambique, get it all, put it in one place, make it available real time from the government and the universities, you know, all that stuff you guys have. But we're going to make a citizen powered network also. And we're going to combine the two to catch people who mess with the weather. Mm. If we don't do this, people will continue to die. You know, disaster capitalists will be able to make event contracts and bet on weather derivatives on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and bet on your weather and then change it.
Mm.
That should be, I mean, the fact that there is stocks, stock market, and is the CME group, Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Yeah. So, yeah, please support my trip, man. Vinny, I really appreciate you going there. It's on climateviewer.com/nmod. Link at the top of the page, dude. Thank you for having me, bro.
You're welcome, and thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Donate at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.